There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. Producer AJ, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
Congratulations, Seattle City Council. You passed by a 9-0 margin a head tax. This was a compromise. They didn't pass the $500 per employee. Instead, they did $275, which gives them, I suppose, a little less money to squander on a plan that doesn't actually exist to go after affordable housing, which isn't a problem when you consider the fact that you could just allow more developers to build and then all of a sudden the rents will come down. But that might be a little bit too friendly to business. This is a city that loves to tell the world that we will happily go after businesses, businesses that created Seattle, businesses responsible for all the positives in the region. Businesses like Amazon that have already paid $250 million in local taxes to the state. But we'll pretend that they're responsible for the problems caused by the Seattle City Council. So they decided to pass this thing. Mayor Jenny Durkan says she's going to sign it because this was the compromise deal that she worked on behind the scenes away from all of us to see who benefits from it. Something tells me that the labor unions, which apparently were at the table, will benefit from this because I have to assume the affordable housing that they're going to build, even though they don't know where they're going to build it yet or really how much it's going to cost, will probably work with unions who will provide the labor, which will guarantee them some jobs. She says this is a good deal. She says that this is something that will actually benefit all of us, but let's be clear, it won't.
We saw that when we come together and sit down together and work together, we can find common ground to get things done.
Unfortunately, Jenny Durkan is delusional because she's getting together with people who do not represent the actual voices of Seattle. Because overwhelmingly, polling suggests the city of Seattle, the actual residents, the people that you say you serve, your bosses, disagree with this. Overwhelmingly. And a big reason why they disagree with it is because no one trusts the city government to spend the tens of millions of dollars, and yet they're saying this is only the beginning.
Today, I think we will take a very important step moving forward to tackle those very challenging moral choices of our time regarding homelessness and housing affordability.
Oh, the council said you can't build too high, which means there were not enough apartments being built to accommodate the actual demand in the region. And as a result of that, you've got a vacancy rate in Seattle of about 4-5%. As a consequence of that, the rents go up higher. Now, the majority of people, the vast majority of people in this city can actually afford the rent. We do not have an affordable housing crisis. We have people who are spending more than they would like on housing. And yes, it turns some people away. Now, I know we want to pretend because they can't afford a Capitol Hill studio apartment that they are then having to be forced to live on the streets. But of course, that's not what's at stake here. The majority of the people who are living out on the streets are dealing with mental health issues, addictions that are not being treated. But we're pretending they're just, you know, the only reason they're on the street is they can't find an apartment to live in. Because they can't move outside of the Seattle area. They can't live in other neighborhoods. They're just stuck here. Okay, fine. We'll go with that. Why don't you allow developers to build up higher? My apartment alone is 8 stories high. If you were allowing them to go 2 more stories... that's an extra 200 apartments. My building alone, that's an extra 200 or so apartments. Imagine if all the developers were allowed to go up just 1-2 stories higher. We wouldn't be in this mess. The mess that the council put us in. And I have to say, there was a moment that kind of just drove me absolutely mad when I was listening to them debate this. It had to do with Sally Bagshaw, council member, taking on Shama Sawant. We brought you the story on the blog at KTH.com a few days ago where Shama Sawant was printing flyers with her seal on it, the Shama Sawant council member seal on it. And apparently her staff members have been using the copiers in the building to make these flyers, which I checked with the Ethics Commission is kosher. You can read that on KTH.com. But listen to this comment that Sally Bagshaw made.
I do not share the anti-business animus that I feel that you are sponsoring. And I also want to acknowledge that on multiple occasions, I've seen your staff using our copiers to print your signs. most recently the tax Amazon by the Affordable Housing Alliance. I just don't think it is right for us to be using city resources or the copy machines to promote something that not all of us agree to.
Well, Sally, let me talk in your tone of voice so it doesn't come off as too angry, but will come off as a little demeaning like you just were to Shama Sawant. Let me just talk to you in this little voice, okay? You may not share the anti-business animus that Shama Sawant does, but you just voted with Shama Sawant 9-0 on a bill that is virulently anti-business. So you can say you appreciate business all you want, but it turns out your actions indicate that you don't give a sweet damn about businesses, that all you care about is this money grab to put into a problem that you created on a plan you don't actually have fleshed out. So we can talk like this all we want, in this sort of passive-aggressive tone. I understand that you don't like that she is coming up with flyers with content you disagree with, but you know what? Because you're actually my council member, I don't appreciate it when council members ignore the public, the people that they serve, to vote into law, ordinances, and bills and taxes that go after the business community that's keeping this city on its feet. Is that, do you got me, Sally Bagshaw? Thanks. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Wait, what?
I love this woman. She's 70 years old. She lives in Philadelphia. And she decided to use a gun against a home intruder who was trying to rob her and maybe kill her. Certainly injure her, because when we're talking about a 70-year-old, it's not that difficult to injure a 70-year-old. Some 43-year-old dude used lawn furniture to climb through a window that he broke in the middle of the night in this poor woman's apartment. Her name is Maxine Thompson. She realized what was going on, so you know what she did? She did what we pretend doesn't actually happen. She grabbed her gun, which she legally owns, to protect herself, and she ends up shooting him. Here she is talking to WTXF-TV.
First, I thought I was dreaming. Oh, then I looked her. Outside, out the window, and I was still hearing the banging, banging, banging. So I yelled to whoever, "Who's that on my door? Get off my door, get off my door."
He did not get off her door. So she shot him.
I shot at him. He turned around and he ran. And when he ran, I ran down the steps behind him and shot at him some more. I'm not a hero. I'm trying to survive. Kill him before he killed me. That's what was going through my mind.
Oh, God bless this woman. God bless this woman who used a gun to protect herself. We pretend that this doesn't ever happen. In fact, when you look at some anti-gun researchers out there, they say this happens like one in a million. No, it doesn't.
So after everything was over, then I did get a little shaky. You know, the thought of, he could have killed me. I hope I taught him and the rest of them a lesson. Stay the hell out of people's house.
I love her. I want her to be my grandma so badly. I want her to be my grandma. But let's not mistake this. There are many cases like this out there that happen on a regular basis that don't necessarily get reported on media. There are lots of people who just show a weapon to get a bad guy with a gun or a knife to run away. Because most of these people are total cowards. You've got the gangbangers, those losers, who will use their weapons to injure. But then you've got some of these other losers who are too afraid to use their own weapon. They're just using it to intimidate you. And so what do? You intimidate them back. You show them your gun. That doesn't necessarily get reported on WTXF in Philadelphia. It doesn't necessarily get reported here in Washington State. But this happens a lot, and it goes unaccounted for, which is why there are so many people out there when you say we're going to come after your guns, we're going to implement more gun control, we know we need to fight back. Because the truth of the matter is, you've got a whole bunch of bad guys who won't be impacted by this law whatsoever. Only the good guys are. Only the good guys get impacted by this law. And that's why people fight back. That's why I'm glad we allow for people to own guns. That's why I'm glad Maxine Thompson is able to give that interview, because she protected herself with a gun against some loser who wanted to rob and potentially murder a 70-year-old adorable sweetheart of a grandmother. I don't know if she's an actual grandmother. She's mine. I'm adopting her. By the way, we raised all the money necessary for the Huntington's Disease Foundation, thanks to you. We exceeded her goal of just $200. We ran past that. If you still want to donate to her, this local family who is dealing with a daughter with Huntington's disease. She came on the show back in January after the school district in Marysville screwed her over. Please text the word donate to the number 1-800-465-8770. It's a none better tax resolution KTTH hotline. They help us raise money on important causes like this. Text the word donate to 1-800-465-8770. None better tax resolution. Kudos to you. Thank you so much for the hard work that you're allowing us to do. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show live in the Online Trading Academy studio. We're going to get to CNN and how they're doing the work of Hamas in a moment. But first, let us talk about something that's happening in Chicago, where finally they're paying attention to their gun violence. I'm kidding. Just joshing you. There's an artwork exhibit that is going after legal gun owners. It's really weird. It's so weird. It's an art installation on display in Chicago. And it looks like a bike share setup, like the Pronto stations that we used to have in the city of Seattle. Only instead of renting out bikes at the station, there are a whole bunch of AR-15s, and it's called the Metro Gun Share Program, which is kind of weird that you're going after AR-15s in the city of Chicago, because the insane amount of gun deaths in Chicago every single week are committed with handguns, not AR-15s. But this is about more than just what's going on in Chicago. This is about gun violence in the country. And we're, again, going to pretend that AR-15s are being used with wanton regularity to commit acts of crime when they're not. CNN says, the protest art piece is an illustration of how easy it is for an ordinary citizen to obtain an assault weapon, and came about as a partnership between the Chicago-based advertising agency The Escape Pod and gun safety organization the Brady Center to prevent gun violence. According to Max Samus, the press secretary for the Brady Center, our hope is to raise awareness of this important issue. We're hoping the Chicago community can take advantage of this and learn how simple it is for a civilian to obtain a weapon of war. Hey, Max, you don't know what it is you're talking about. An AR-15 is not a weapon of war. I know you think if you repeat that phrase and talking point over and over and over again, that that's what the narrative will become. But facts don't change because you simply want them to. Facts remain facts. You, for example, remain a dope. There's nothing I can do to make you not be a dope. There's nothing I can do to not make you an ideological dolt. I can try, but there's not. You are stuck in your ways, and you always will be. An AR-15 is not a weapon of war, and it is not incredibly easy to get. It is not as easy as going through a bike share system, because last time I checked, you don't need to go through a background check for a bike share. Now, to be fair, I don't use bike shares. Apparently, Jacob, you are a fan. It's a slightly different system, but how many times did you have to go through a bike background check?
For my bikes?
Yeah.
Nothing. I just gave them my credit card information.
So then it's not as easy as getting a gun. Could you just go buy a gun at a gun shop right now with just a credit card? No. You have to go through the background check system. It seems to me that you've got a lot of problems with gun violence in Chicago that you're ignoring because you want to go after AR-15s, which isn't even a problem in Chicago. I looked over the weekend, 3 killed, 17 wounded in weekend shootings. That according to CBS Chicago. That was done with handguns. The week prior, 5 dead, 35 wounded in weekend shootings across Chicago, also according to CBS Chicago. These are not AR-15s that are being used. These are handguns that are being used. It seems to me that these are bad guys getting a hold of these guns. It kind of seems like there's more warfare going on in Chicago than anywhere overseas, and you're worried about AR-15s and good guys getting a hold of AR-15s. What are you doing to go after the bad guys who are getting guns in Chicago, in a city that has really stringent gun control laws? What are you doing? Because whatever it is you're doing, you realize it's not working, yeah? You realize that in Seattle, which is also virulently anti-gun, but doesn't quite have the anti-gun laws on the books that Chicago has, we're not getting these gun deaths every single week, every single weekend. That's not happening here. That's not happening in Tacoma or Olympia or Everett or Shoreline or Bainbridge Island. It's happening in Chicago. And yet you guys are worried about access to AR-15s because you don't want a hunter to get a hold of it. You don't want a guy who simply is a responsible gun owner who collects guns. You don't want him to get a hold of it or her to get a hold of it. All the while, people are using handguns. Gangbangers are using handguns in your city that you've decided apparently just give away to these gangbangers to commit these acts. And you're kind of just sitting there silent. But yeah, let's pretend that an AR-15 is a weapon of war, because that makes Max Samus of the Brady Center feel a little bit cozier inside, knowing that he too can fool people into giving away their Second Amendment rights. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. It's the Jason Rant Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM in the Greater East Side. The city of Seattle and the city council passed an ordinance forbidding landlords from considering applicants' criminal histories when they're renting out their property. This obviously puts landlords in a tough spot because, as much as I understand the progressive concern over prejudging rapists and thieves, it seems like a serious overreach for the government to get involved. Landlords are, in fact, fighting back. There is a lawsuit underway, and with the help of Ethan Blevins with the Pacific Legal Foundation, they're hoping to overturn this ordinance. Ethan joins me this morning. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
So take me through specifically your client and their concern with this bill.
Sure. So we have a couple of clients in this case. We are representing the Rental Housing Association of Washington, and they provide screening services to landlord members, which obviously would include criminal history. Of course, now they can't provide that service anymore. So their injury is a little different than our other clients who are small-time landlords in the city of Seattle. One of them is a single woman who's a survivor of sexual assault. Personal safety is one of her highest priorities when she's dealing with the single-family house that she rents out in West Seattle. She's terrified of having to rent to somebody that she just doesn't feel safe with and is blind to, you know, a possible violent felony in the past and so forth. One of our other clients owns a triplex in the city of Seattle, and they live in one of the triplex units and rent out the other two. So they share a unit, they share a yard with their other tenants. Obviously, they're in close contact with these people in the same building as themselves, and they want to know a little bit about their individual they're renting to, particularly whether they have committed a crime in their past. So, you know, these aren't greedy landlords willing to squeeze anybody for a buck. They are concerned for their own safety and for the safety of their other tenants.
So then what is the legal argument against this? Because I imagine someone would say that they're essentially creating a protected status case for people who have done time, that there is no difference in saying, I'm not going to rent to you because you're Jewish or because you're Black.
Sure. So there is an element behind this that looks a lot like a protected class. I mean, a major difference is that most protected classes, it's based on some kind of immutable status, something about your identity that's fundamental, and this is really about past actions you've taken. It's a little bit of a different creature, but our legal claims are twofold. First, we're bringing a due process claim that says, look, you're taking a valuable property interest away from landlords, which is the right to select a tenant that they would want to rent to, not to be forced to rent to somebody who might have a criminal past. If you don't have any other reason to reject them besides their criminal history, then you're going to have to take them. And we think that's a burden on their due process rights. Their property rights are being taken away without the due process of law, because that's such an unreasonable and arbitrary burden placed on them. The other claim is a First Amendment claim, which is that companies like Rental Housing Association have a First Amendment right to share information, especially information that's on public record, about the criminal history of these individuals that landlords are looking to rent to. And landlords have, in turn, a First Amendment right to access that public information. So those are the two claims, due process and the First Amendment.
So here's I want to read to you a short statement, a declaratory statement from someone who was printed in the Seattle Times, quoted in the Seattle Times. He lives in Ballard. His name is Zachary Tutwiler. He said, regardless of my criminal history, I deserve housing. We all deserve housing. Do you believe that?
I don't believe that. Just like anything, any good that we consume in life, whether it's food, whether it's housing, whether even it's healthcare, you know, there's somebody else at the other end of that transaction that has rights too. And here it's we have landlords' rights over their property, and certainly somebody has a right not to be discriminated against on these other recognized protected classes such as race and so forth. At least that's the current state of the law. But those landlords have a right also. And I don't think we need to say that these rights are, this is a zero-sum game where either the landlord wins or the former convicts win. There are other helpful ways to help these people, including reforming our criminal justice system, including providing assisted public housing. That's the kind of answers we need, not kind of hoisting this burden on the private residential housing market.
Just joining me, I'm talking with Ethan Blevins. He's with the Pacific Legal Foundation. They are representing a number of landlords as well as an association that is fighting back against this ordinance in the city of Seattle that says, with very rare exceptions, a landlord cannot take into account the criminal histories of the people who are trying to rent out land on their property. How far along are you in this lawsuit?
So we just filed the complaint at the beginning of the month, and we'll be meeting with the city attorney's office soon to kind of discuss a schedule moving forward. I'm hoping that we will have a hearing with the judge that on the merits of this case towards the late summer, early fall, and then hopefully a decision by the end of the year.
Are you looking forward to a judge making a ruling on this, or is there a concern that because it is such an ideological city and this bill is clearly ideologically driven that you might not get a fair hearing?
I'm pretty confident we will get a fair hearing on this one. I think a sign that we can look forward to a fair hearing is the recent ruling on the First in Time case where we represent landlords challenging the city's First in Time rule, which said that landlords had to accept the very first qualified applicant who walks in the door. And we had a very clear ruling in our favor in that case, which I think indicates that judges in Seattle are, even the progressive climate among the judges in Seattle, isn't enough to quite push them as far as the city has gone. And so I think we're starting to see pushback at this point.
Well, what I think is particularly interesting here is the council and sometimes the mayor's office, it seems like they act in a way because they want to be the first to push an ideological position, a policy that's based in ideology, as far to the left as possible, rather than, you know, take some time and think about the legal ramifications. Because I imagine they could have come up with a law that's similar in its intent, but probably a little bit easier to pass legal muster. But they chose not to do that because they're just trying to make a point.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, they love to be the first in the nation to do all kinds of things with the assumption that that's, you know, categorically a good thing. And I think they are necessarily on shakier ground when they do that. And I think that's why we've had a lot of success on these first-of-its-kind sort of measures, whether it's the first in time, the city income tax, this bizarre criminal background rule. And another thing to keep in mind is that this isn't the Wild West. This is already very highly regulated, the landlord-tenant relationship in general, but especially specifically criminal background. So there's federal fair housing laws that regulate, you know, how landlords can use criminal background checks. There's state law that already regulates that. So the city's just imposing yet another burden, and it's the worst yet of all those burdens. And I think the city just sees that it wants to do display its own virtue regardless of the practical outcome.
Oh, you mean virtue signaling is annoying? I've been talking with Ethan Blevins. He's with the Pacific Legal Foundation. On the one hand, when Seattle passes ordinances like this, it's maddening and annoying. But on the other hand, because they're so quick to try to be the first ones to pass something, it makes it a little bit easier to actually defeat it once it goes in front of a judge. I wish you all the best of luck with the Pacific Legal Foundation and your fight in this to go after this ridiculous ordinance law. Good luck in the courts, and we'll hear from you hopefully after you win this one.
Thanks so much, Jason.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. If you want to send me a text message, 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770 on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show. Oh, boy. I triggered some folks on Twitter just now. I triggered some anti-Semites and Hamas supporters. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRants, R-A-N-T-Z. You see, yesterday, a whole bunch of terrorists decided to try to use the ceremony in Jerusalem as a means to spread Hamas propaganda. Hamas, of course, an anti-Israeli terrorist organization that seeks to destroy Israel, wipe them from the face of the earth. They decided to protest and use humans as shields in their violent attack at the border on Israelis. And as a result, Israel decided to defend itself. And as a result, over 50 people are dead, none Israelis, because Israelis are a little bit better than Hamas is at committing acts of terror, because Israel doesn't act terroristically. That's Hamas's job. And so as a result of that, Hamas is actually winning the media war right now, because they aimed to get photos of dead Palestinians to be superimposed next to photos of Americans being celebrated for moving the embassy, our embassy, to Jerusalem. And you've got a whole bunch of people who are falling for this Hamas propaganda. CNN, MSNBC, AFP, Reuters. I'm seeing a whole bunch of it. I saw Chelsea Handler tweet something out going after Nikki Haley for defending Israel in their act. She's saying they're defending Israel. Netanyahu is silent on just murdering a whole bunch of Palestinians, which, of course, that's not what happened.
Who among us would accept this type of activity on your border? No one would. No country in this chamber would act with more restraint than Israel has. In fact, the records of several countries here today suggest they would be much less restrained. Those who suggest that the Gaza violence has anything to do with the location of the American embassy are sorely mistaken. Rather, the violence comes from those who reject the existence of the State of Israel in any location. Such a motivation, the destruction of a United Nations member state, is so illegitimate as to not be worth our time in the Security Council, other than the time it takes to denounce it.
Oh, but MSNBC reporter Ayman Mohailadin said Palestinians would find these comments in front of the UN Security Council meeting to be offensive.
I was listening to Nikki Haley as well there, and I was thinking, you know, what she was describing was her accurate assessment of the situation both in Gaza and reflecting the reality in Israel. What I didn't hear in that speech is probably equally just as important, and that is, what is the reality of life like for Palestinians living under Israeli control? And we're here in the West Bank, so we're not in Gaza, and it's important to emphasize that over the past several years, because of close Palestinian security cooperation with Israel, Hamas doesn't really have a presence here. They don't have any senior members here. Most of them have been arrested and rounded up. There has not been a very strong foothold for them to be as visible as they are in Gaza, where they control. So in the West Bank, the reality of what life is like for Palestinians absent of Hamas under Israeli control is something that she didn't talk about. And I think a lot...
Yeah, she didn't talk about it because the conversation is about what's happening at the Gaza border. I'm sorry, that might offend you. But let's actually give you some context. Because reporters are pretending that innocent Palestinians are being killed. Some of them are. They're not being murdered. They're dead this morning because they were being used as human shields by Hamas. Because right now, I'm looking at some of the pictures coming in of the people who were killed. I'm looking right now at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 13 photos right now of people killed at the border. They include members of Hamas's internal security apparatus and members of the Saraya al-Quds, the armed wing of Iran-sponsored Palestinian Islamic Jihad. They were there with weapons, trying to cause problems for Israel, trying to break across the border to commit acts of terror against Israelis. They were killed. They were using humans as shields. I'm looking at their photos right now. Because what ends up happening after this is they release martyrdom pictures. And that's what I'm looking at. Martyrs. Martyrs to the cause of going after Jews. And CNN is falling for it. MSNBC is falling for it. And it's disgusting. It's disgusting because we allow this to happen all the time. And I point this out on Twitter, and of course all the anti-Semitic tweets are coming my way. But I'll happily stand up for Israel. I'll happily stand up for any of our allies that protect themselves. Like any country would. Unless you purposefully ignore the history of the conflict. Unless you purposefully ignore the context. But if you listen to CNN and MSNBC and AFP and Reuters and all these websites and media outlets, they'll have you believe that Israel is just firing indiscriminately against a whole bunch of protesters. No, 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 no. This was set up by Hamas. They do it on a regular basis. They put the innocent people, they in some cases force innocent people to participate. Then from right behind them, they lob bombs and gunfire into Israel, putting Israel in a position where I suppose they could just allow it to happen and risk injury to Israelis. I suppose they can allow it to happen and just risk them getting in to Israeli property, land, breaking in over the border. I suppose they can do that. I suppose they can put on the line Israelis and their own country's safety. I guess they could. Or they can defend themselves. Or they can send a message that, you know what, we're not going to allow you to do this because we understand your end goal. Your end goal is the end of Israel as we know it. And so I will gladly stand with Israel. I will gladly stand with this administration in the United States that backs our allies in Israel. The only country in the region that stands for democracy and freedom. The only country in the region that pushes back against religious bigotry. So good on you, Israel, for defending yourself. And sorry, all you anti-Semites on Twitter, you're not going to stop me from speaking some truths. Which is, yeah, when you put out Hamas propaganda, you're a tool of Hamas. Which makes you, yeah, anti-Israel and anti-Semitic. Twitter.com/JasonRantz if you want to follow me. Unless I trigger you, my apologies. Please don't follow me then. I care about your well-being.